Ladies and gentlemen, it is showtime. Please welcome the team of the Fulhamish podcast.
It's the Fulhamish podcast, your independent voice of Fulham FC. My name's Sammy James, and as ever, this podcast is brought to you by The Athletic UK. And tonight we'll be discussing Fulham's 1-1 draw against Liverpool, the champions at Craven Cottage. And it was a performance we can all be thoroughly proud of. It probably should have been 3 points. We'll certainly take a point given the opposition. Here to discuss the match with me today is Drew Heatley.
Hello, up yours, Carragher, and up yours, Klopp.
Very nice. Cam Ramsey, hello.
Evening, Shaggers.
And Izzy Barger, how you doing?
I'm good, thanks. I'll keep mine PG. I don't feel like I can match either of those.
Probably for the best, Izzy. Probably for the best. Well, loads to discuss. As I say, all the fallout from the 1-1 draw tonight as Fulham move up to 8 points for the season. It definitely, though, could have been 10. And also we'll do a little preview of Brighton and answer some of your questions later in the podcast. We'll do some three-word reviews. Obviously, when we record straight after the match, it doesn't give us loads of time to go through them. So I had a quick look, though, just before we started the podcast. So starting with Felix, AK's firearm. We will come to the penalty incident. It was a very harsh one indeed. Man like Anguissa said, one word, robbed, which I thought was very, very nice. Elijah said, who's down now? There's a lot of Carragher ones, particularly on Instagram, and some of them just can't be read on the podcast. But Colin Fraser, 8370 on Instagram, said, pushovers no longer. And Ishan MS on Instagram said, lads showed Carragher. Drew, let's start with you. It was an interesting lineup, not really for who came in and out of the first team. It was Lamina in for Reed, which is kind of a like for like, but no Mitrovic in the squad was the initial shock news. And we won't dwell too much on Mitrovic today because much more important things happened. But I mean, what is going on there?
Yeah, it raised a few eyebrows, especially as, you know, we've known that he's been on the bench the last few games, and there's always, then it starts the rumour mill going. But I choose on this occasion to just sort of take the club at face value. They say he's injured. I kind of feel like that might be the case. You know, he's not going to be happy with the way things have gone. But I've said it before that, you know, Scott's experimenting has sort of paid off, and he's almost not, he hasn't really got room to complain about it at the moment. Now, if things start going the opposite direction, to be honest, he's going to be brought back in. His time at the club is in my opinion, not over. But there was no sort of shock the fact that he wasn't starting today, certainly.
I mean, Izzy, Scott said on Thursday that he was fit. There's a picture of him warming up with only an hour before the game. So I don't know. Do you buy the club's line that he's injured?
Yeah, I think this is an important issue, and kind of with it coming so suddenly today, I definitely wasn't expecting it. So I would like to say, you know, believe what the club has said is true. But what I do know is, kind of someone close to Mitrovic has kind of implied that, you know, Mitrovic is a starting man and he kind of expected to start. If he's not in that starting 11, then he's not happy about it. And I actually heard someone say that if the person that's close to Mitrovic to kind of say that if Mitrovic wasn't going to be in it, he was going to be very angry at Scott about it. But yeah, I think I agree with Drew. Like, Mitrovic's time isn't over, and Scott has said he's got a big role to play in the year ahead of us. I think the rumour mill does kind of start turning, but maybe he has been a little bit of a bust up in this occasion, because to not even be on the bench was really shocking for me.
Scoops FC here on Fulhamish. Cam, so we went into the game and we didn't miss Mitrovic at all. It was a flying start from the Whites. The first half hour was, as far as being a fan watching football goes, perfection. And with fans in the ground, just to make it that extra bit sweeter.
No, of course. And the fans certainly made a huge difference to the performance, especially coming out of the blocks. We raced into the ascendancy and really put Liverpool up against the wall. And I think that continued throughout the game anyway. But going back to Mitrovic, I don't think we've really missed him at all. He's a player for me that has a lot to prove now. You know, that double prong attack that we've got up top with Lookman and Caviero works so well because they're so dynamic, full of pace, where Mitrovic, yes, he's got a lot of power and he's you know, brimming with prowess. He just lacks that cutting edge in terms of his versatility and pace. So if Mitrovic is going to get back into this squad, then he's certainly got to shift even Caballero, who has certainly come on leaps and bounds after being given a new berth up top. And also Lookman, who for me was an outstanding performer today. He was non-stop, like a tiny little freight train running into every single 50-50 and instance where he could potentially make something happen. So it was extremely pleasing to the eye to see us perform in such a way, even without Mitrovic.
Drew, we really started brilliantly. Caballero had two early chances. They were well saved, but straight at Alisson. The second one actually might have been just offside, I think, if it went to VAR. But you could tell from kind of the first 5 minutes that Fulham actually were really, really in this game. And I'm so panicked watching Fulham at the moment in the first 15 minutes because I'm just desperate for us not to concede. But in this occasion, there was no danger of us conceding at all. It was more surprising that we didn't take the lead.
Yeah, the front foot is not particularly a position that we're all used to being in as fans, but it was just so bright. And I honestly think that the fans had something to do, a huge part to play in that. I was the other day on Twitter welling up at the Wickham manager clapping a couple hundred fans at their ground, and then to see it at the Cottage, I thought this has got to be affecting the players. And you're right, Caballero had a couple of chances at the beginning, but he suits this new look sort of tactic that Scott's been deploying, because it's all about industry, and it's typified by Deco Dover-Reed, the way that he's just the Duracell bunny of the side. But Caballero also has that industry. He has that. He'll try his hardest. He'll always run. He might lack that final product, that end product, but he really does. He really does give it his all. So he kind of suits this new star that we're playing. And it's a shame that he couldn't put one either side of Alisson early doors.
I mean, Izzy, it's got to be a penalty for me against Caballero. One of those, a bit similar to Deco Dover-Reed's penalty that was given against Leicester. I did not notice it at the time. I just assumed it was a goal kick or a corner, whatever. But I am really stunned that Andre Mariner is called over to the VAR monitor. I was saying to my dad, I was like, it's a penalty. He's not going to go over to that monitor, look at that evidence and not give a penalty. I can't see why he's stuck with his original decision there.
I think that was exactly why he stuck with it, because it was like a dent in his ego. He got told to come over to the monitor, and apparently he's only the second ref that's stuck with his decision since looking at the monitor. I feel like it was a pride thing. He wanted to stick with it, but there were, how many replays was everyone getting? I think everyone at the end of it was like, oh yeah, that was a penalty. Even Graham Souness saying, yeah, it was a penalty. There's contact with the foot at first, and then it ends up Cav kind of kicking the ball away. I guess at first, possibly it seemed like Cav kind of maybe shielded the ball with his own foot, but when you have that many replays, that is a penalty.
Izzy is 100% right, I think, in the terms of the referees are under siege by VAR, like, as well. Like, their integrity is being constantly called into question by these decisions. So I thought it was only a matter of time before an official sort of tries and stands his ground and says, actually, no, I made the right call, and sticks to it. And now we've had more than just the one that's done it so far, which is a staggeringly low number. I fully expect to see more refs do it.
Cam, your thoughts on the pen?
No, for me, the way that Fabinho kind of levered himself into Cav, it wasn't a natural way for Caballero to fall anyway. And yeah, of course, it took a lot of scrutinising to basically work out where the contact was. For me, I must admit, actually, I'm going to, you know, eat my words a little bit here, but I thought it wasn't a penalty to start with. You know, I thought it was a fairly clever challenge from Fabinho itself, but After just dissecting a little further, there was definite contact, and Caballero's foot that was, you know, it was going to be the standing foot got taken from underneath him. And it just seems like a little bit of a Premier League bias for me. And that might just be being a little bit salty and maybe a little bit annoyed by the fact that, you know, we've had our luck with penalties. Obviously, we've had our disadvantages too, but it just seems like such a top six bias. And obviously, we'll talk about it later on, but the penalty that was given against Kamara just seems very, very unfair in my opinion as well. But that's just how it is.
I would say that as far as the Fulhamish WhatsApp was concerned, it was far from unanimous that it was a penalty. I went straight on there, like, defo a pen. with the old gentleman Jim eyes that I have when watching Fulham. But, you know, Jack and Dom both saying they didn't think it was a penalty, would be disappointed if that was given against us. So I don't know. I guess the only thing that you can to see the defense for it is maybe not clear and obvious error. That, and yeah. I guess that is what VAR was there for. But as far as I'm concerned, his standing foot's been taken away. And as we saw with the Kamara penalty that was given, in my book, if I'm watching football just from a completely subjective point of view, that is more of a penalty than, or more of an offence than what Kamara did. But let's come on to the Kamara penalty later. And Cam, let's talk through Bobby Decherd-Overeem's goal. Lovely pass from Lookman. Kind of all the Liverpool players were looking to spring a counter-attack and we won the ball back. Lovely little side rule pass to Decherd-Overeem. But he had a lot to do, especially to beat a goalkeeper like Alisson from there.
Well, of course. And if you're going to pick one player in this squad at the moment to, you know, to rifle the ball past one of the best keepers in the league, it would be BDR. When he's placed in that position, you could see just by the way he planted himself, just set himself for the contact. He was ready to rip that pass and into the left-hand side of the goal. And it's kind of testament to the rebirth he's had in the squad. I think he's brimming with confidence, and it's not just down to his work rate and his endeavour. It's also the fact that he is still a striker and he is still someone with deadly prowess and you know, that eye for a goal. And he couldn't have struck it any better. I mean, there are a lot of keen football players within the Fulhamish lineup that would dream of hitting a ball that well on a Sunday morning, but it never comes off. And that is just down to work on the training field and just being naturally gifted at your profession. And I can't laud the finish enough, to be quite honest with you. It was just sublime. And like you say, it was a well-worked move as well. I think we sprung their trap very, very acutely. It was something which obviously had to come from impulse in term, opposed to anything that's worked on the training field, and we executed it perfectly. So from a fan's perspective and from a neutral's perspective, if there are any out there watching the game, it was a textbook goal and absolutely beautiful to see.
Drew, there's a lot of players this year that are really proving maybe us as fans wrong and pundits, and Decherd-Overeem's one of them. So last season, he played 44 times for Fulham. He scored 6 goals, got 3 assists. He's played a quarter of that this season in the Premier League and already has 4 goals and some terrific performances to his name as well. And, you know, a lot of people are talking about how Anguissa was wrongly judged during his season in the Premier League, and Cavallero seems to be coming back to prove a few people wrong as well. But Decherd-Overeem is up there. He was maligned last season, really, and at the start of this one as well.
Yeah, he's a player who thrives on confidence for me. Last season there were games where we were all just, when we were allowed crowds in the ground, we were all almost trying to suck the ball in and ourselves, because everybody wanted him to score, because you could see that, you know, the passion and the sort of the endeavor was there, but he just couldn't do it for love nor money. And now you see he's in this new role that you know, completely sort of has me doff my cap to him, because he has so much to do and he works so hard in it, and you can see he's thriving in it, and it's sort of helping him when he's going forward. The first Cav chance, you just wish that Decherd-Overeem got on the end of that Loftus cheek ball, because I think we would have gone up one up even earlier. But it's great to see from Decherd-Overeem, because him and Cav and Knockaert were these, you know, loan to buy options where, you know, if we couldn't try before we buy, we would have said they were great deals at the beginning. But when you see, you know, a player across a season, you're naturally going to have a lot more to say about them, and you're going to see their weaknesses and their strengths a lot clearer. And he was sort of tarred with the same brush as Knockaert, and Cav can be quite black and white sometimes. So it's quite hot and cold. So yeah, it's nice to see Bobby Decherd-Overeem sort of break out on his own and prove his worth. And Lord knows we need to everybody to sort of pull their weight this year.
And on the other side, Izzy, Lookman had a really, really good first half, but against Trenton Jones, he just every time he got the ball, he looked like he was going to do something dangerous with it, basically.
Yeah, for me, he's just our golden boy at the moment. You know, he was creating chances, but he was also having a go for himself. He's kind of got that trademark sort of shimmying up the left-hand side, kind of his little twinkle toes, dancing in and out. And players, big teams don't know how to deal with him. And he unleashes that sort of, again, that trademark kind of low drive. from that left, which causes them so many problems. And I think quite a few players were having to fill in because Curtis Jones, Trent at times, you know, it was causing them a real headache. And that kind of Lookman build-up is our real danger area for me, and where so many peach chances come from. And it seems to be when we are playing so well is when that Lookman charging up the left-hand side is flowing so well. And for me, it's kind of bearing the fruits of that, really.
I mean, second half came along. Fulham did well to go in half time 1-0 up. There was a couple of chances towards the end of the first half. Mane and particularly Salah, you'd have thought if Salah was banging form that he might have tucked that away, but it went the wrong side of the post, fortunately for Fulham. And Drew, second half was a different game, wasn't it? It was a lot of, you know, backs to the wall, all men behind the ball for Fulham. I guess one disappointment for the game is that we couldn't really take advantage of their injury problems. They already had enough injury problems going into this game, particularly in defence. And then when you have a centre-back pairing of Henderson and Fabinho, two centre midfielders by trade, it was just a bit of a shame that Fulham weren't able to kind of capitalise on what is a pretty makeshift Liverpool defence.
Yeah, absolutely. There is that side of things. And I think, but as well, you know, much like the Leicester game, it's how you sort of react in that second half after you've had the break. Okay, you're up, you're winning in the game. And for a team like Fulham, you know, we all feel like it's almost too early. You know, you almost want us to keep it level until the last minute and nick it at the death. So when you get a first half goal, particularly against the Champions of England, you know that there's going to be a whole lot of hard work to do. So there is that one side of things where you're sort of looking and saying, oh, what if we could have just done, you know, one thing more, one step further. But actually, to, you know, to come away with a point which could have easily have been three, going up within the first 25 minutes or whatever it was, I think you know, tremendous credit. Because if you just think about what 2 months ago, what it would have been like, you know, we wouldn't even gone up, we would have, you know, probably finished the game 3-0 or 4-0 loss. So the fact that we managed to take that second half, and although, you know, yes, okay, we lost that half 1-0, it was always going to be for us, how did we react when we conceded? Because I just think, no matter what, I think it was almost inevitable that Liverpool were going to get a goal, even though they didn't threaten. It just, for me, it's how we reacted to something not going our way. And we were resolute and we held out. And for me, that's just as impressive as the goal itself.
Cam, Alphonse Areola had another good game. I feel like I will say that every week that I ever host a podcast, but, you know, particularly the save from Henderson in the second half, it is a brilliant pour out to his right hand side. But also, he was so commanding from crosses. So many times the ball came into the box, he rose highest and claimed the ball, no fuss, distributed it well. I have so much respect. And, you know, it's Marek Rodak's birthday today, and we've had this debate all season about whether it should be Rodak or Areola. But right now, I mean, I would honestly think he's top 10 goalkeepers in the Premier League right now, surely.
Easily. And it seems that every time I write my articles, I tend to reserve a little spot for Areola, because he's been a revelation this season. But it comes to no surprise when you take of a player of his calibre, coming from, you know, Real Madrid on loan the season before to PSG, and obviously to lowly little Fulham. He's going to heighten the calibre within the squad, and he's certainly done that. And Marek Rodak's birthday today, of course, he would have been loving a start against Liverpool. But Areola certainly done a service to the Slovakian goalkeeper, and I can't think of many better stoppers in the Premier League currently, other than Alisson, of course. I thought both goalkeepers today were in outstanding fettle, but it's a real credit to the keeper that we have between the sticks, because he saves us so many points, and he was a saving grace for us today, as he was in the last couple of weeks. He has been obviously our number one, and I honestly, you know, I haven't really processed the game properly yet, but the saves he made, they're just as good as a goal. And, you know, we're moving in the right direction. If after a game, I'm sat here and I'm actually feeling quite deflated in the fact that we got a point against the champions. And that point was, you know, that was pulled and palmed away by Areola, of course, who kept Liverpool at bay. So completely overwhelmed by him, and hats off to the guy. He's been a real breath of fresh air.
Izzy, let's come on to Liverpool's goal, and they won a pretty dangerous free kick. I think Cavallero fouled Curtis Jones just on the edge of the box, and it looked like we'd survived what was a pretty precarious moment, and it hit the wall, and I think we even managed to stop it going out for a corner. So we breathe a sigh of relief, and then you just hear the horrible word from Carragher on the box going, penalty.
It's a penalty, Liverpool.
It's a Christmas miracle.
It's an accent, isn't it?
So and you watch the replay, and I don't know what to make of it, Izzy. I kind of just watched it and went, I just sighed, yeah, because I know the rules, but also, yeah, in my book, there's nowhere. It's just it's not enough an offence, and Liverpool have literally been given a get out of jail free card.
100%. And hearing you guys do those Carragher impressions has given me like PTSD. It's just horrible, isn't it? It was like, I guess the way the rules are, you know, we know the rules, the t-shirt rule now, the arms slightly raised. It seemed glued to his body, from my opinion. But I guess now with the rules, it's always likely to be given, you know, whether it's a penalty in the spirit of the game, I guess it's another matter. But Mo Salah took the kick, and with that Liverpool kind of had their point. But it's just so harsh. But I guess with us, VAR decisions have, and things like that, have gone our way against Leicester and things like that. So I guess it's just the nature of the Premier League at the minute. And I don't want to be one of those people that's like, oh God, VAR penalty decisions, whether are killing the game or whatever, because I've just come away from that feeling so good. But yeah, it's deflating, and I don't want to hear you guys do those Carragher impressions again. It gives me shivers.
To be honest, though, I mean, just touching on it, I think the rules are so vague. You know, I understand that your arms can't be above shoulder height or whatever, but just for pure biomechanics, you know, for a person as a human to actually levitate, to jump, you have to build, you know, some amount of thrust, and that comes from your arms. You know, you can't just jump like a pencil. You know, it doesn't work like that. You've got to try and flap your arms a little bit like a bird, like, for example. I don't know. I'm just rambling again now. But at the end, you know, it just seems so strange that, you know, referees don't take that into account. To jump, you kind of need to adjust your body in such a way where your limbs are going to be out. You know, they are going to be protruding a little bit. It just seems so strange.
I guess, Drew, is one thing, you know, I get your point there, Cam, but we're now at the stage of football where we have someone lying down on the ground to stop free kicks going under the wall. It's all about minute details in football. And when you're jumping in a wall, we've seen Spurs players charging down shots this year with their hands behind their backs. They are the details that you sometimes need to win Premier League football games. And Fulham, you know, we need to maybe have a rule. We have our hands behind our backs when we're in the wall for a free kick. Yes, it might mean we can't jump that, you know, extra half an inch, but we'll stop a penalty.
You're 100% right. It's now such a fine margins game, the set pieces, the free kicks, that, you know, his arm was not by his side. It wasn't behind him. It was halfway up. He turned around. For me, it's annoying. It's a penalty because of that. Like, I know that now, you know, it's clear as mud, the new rules, and so many amends and whatnot. But it is exactly how you say. It's the fine margins. You can't do it. It's just unfortunate. You know, will Parker be annoyed with Kamara for doing that? Probably not. I think it's just one of those things. But I think, yeah, going forward, it's one of you have to say, right, there are so many things pulled up on VAR, and this one wasn't even done. But, you know, handball has been a hot topic since day one of this season. You have to eliminate any chance that you possibly can that you'll be caught up in one of these sort of decisions. And we didn't help ourselves by the way that Kamara was. And if, you know, Tosin as well had his hands up, had his arms in the way as well. So it could have easily have been him. It's just, you know, for me, it's a bit sad that it was Kamara, because he's quite an easy scapegoat sometimes. And I think I always feel bad when something happens to him, because I'm like, you know, it's a bit, when it rains, it pours for him. But, you know, it could have been anyone. And it's just one of those things where you just have to eliminate that danger.
Yeah, and sadly now football is in such a state where we look at the minutiae. Look, it's the same with goalkeepers when they're saving penalties, keep your feet on the line because you're not going to get away with it. Do I think it's a bonkers rule that's just that it is petty as hell? Yeah, I do. But this is the rule, the game that we're playing, and sadly we have to stick to those rules. Speaking of penalty saving, do we think that Areola could have done a little bit better? It wasn't the world's greatest penalty from Salah. I know that Dom, who was doing the Twitter for Fulhamish, said that, you know, Areola possibly should be saving that. My first instinct is to think that's harsh. I don't know about you guys.
Yeah, I actually thought Areola did really well, but maybe I saw it in a completely different light to Dom. But I was like, oh, I thought he did really well. Like, I thought it was like frustrating. It was a shame that he didn't save it, and that would have just been a bonus. I thought, oh, once again, Areola's got a fingertip to it, and I thought he was just showing how good he was. I think it's a bit harsh to say that maybe he should have done better, but maybe I was viewing it in a different way to Dom. I don't know.
I think he was taken by surprise. You expect a player like Salah to aim for a corner and he kind of just lash it down the middle. And that, for me, you had to adjust. He had to adjust himself to get down low centrally, where I think he was expecting to, you know, propel himself to either one side of the goal. And he was very, very unlucky. I mean, desperately unlucky not to get cleaner contact with a palm on the ball. So I do think it was unlucky. I don't think he should have done better, though, because... yeah, I just don't see it that way. I generally think that it was a very, very difficult shot to stop, really.
I think it's easy to get caught up in the Fulham mindset, but it is actually the advantage is very much with the penalty taker. And so I think it was, yeah. Areola was never expected to save it, but I think he was just caught a bit off guard, and it was Salah would probably be breathing a sigh of relief there.
It is the school of thought of when you bag it low and hard, even just down the middle or slightly off to the middle, they're very hard to save. It was shades of Beckham 2002 against Argentina. Low, hard, down the middle, not the greatest penalty, but they more often than not go in, and they're very hard to save, even like Areola in this case, who didn't actually dive one way or the other and still couldn't get to it just through sheer force, you know, a ball being hit that hard from 12 yards, unless it happens to just fortunately hit you, it's very, very difficult to save. Let's look at the wider picture then of this point. And Drew, we heard Carragher's comments at the start of the season where he says that he's never been more certain of anything in his life. And we now sit 2 points outside the relegation zone. We don't know what the Burnley score is because it's being played now as we record this podcast. But we easily could have beaten Liverpool today. Things didn't quite go our way. But we've come out of a sequence of three games with Leicester, Man City and Liverpool and got 4 points. And my Lord, we'd have taken that 2 weeks ago.
Oh, absolutely. And this is the thing. The upturn in our performance, in our performances every game, has been gradual, but it's been marked. And now, you know, I've gone from, you know, beginning of the season, sort of in the back of my mind, thinking about Derby's points total, to now thinking, actually, there's absolutely no reason why we can't finish midway up the bottom half of the table. You know, I'm not getting delusions of grandeur here. I'm saying, wouldn't it be great to finish 13th or 14th and not be looking over our shoulders for the final 5-6 games of the season? Because we're more than good enough. You know, everybody's been putting in a shift the last few games. And even from, you know, you can stretch it back to sort of like the last half dozen, where, you know, we've really started to turn what was a sinking ship. And, you know, so today is just really the icing on the cake. And I think Scott said something similar in his post-match comments. And, you know, people like Carragher, pundits, most of them are just shock jocks designed to get little Twitter clips that they can use. So he'll be, I'm absolutely certain he'll be made to eat his words, because the side that he saw that day against Aston Villa, there's no comparison to the one that we saw today and the one that we've seen recently.
And Cam, it's remarkable how this team, which is so new in so many positions, within such a short space of time, is competing with the Premier League champions. Yes, a slightly depleted Premier League champions, but still, like, went to Man City last week and didn't disgrace themselves, went up to Leicester and won. Like, it's remarkable from Scott. It's absolutely remarkable, isn't it?
Well, Scott Parker's been touting this mentality for a while now. We've heard him in post and pre-match interviews. You know, he's always talking up the team spirit and the togetherness within the camp, even in those dire you know, initial phases in the season where we couldn't buy a goal for love nor money. But he was always he was always positive about the feel good factor within the camp, and it's certainly starting to come to the fore on the pitch now. And today, I think that is one thing that is going to see us through this season, much like it did with Sheffield United last season. I'm not saying that we're going to aim for a top 10 finish or even a 11th place finish or whatever, however they finished last season, but it will certainly do us well, because you look at the teams below us. And, the results have been going against them. There seems to be a little dejection amongst the chasing pack that are, of course, baying for our position of 17th. But I was extremely won over by the way that we just conducted ourselves, and I have been for a while now. You know, even when we were chasing the game, even at Man City last week, there was an undying attitude within the squad, and that's something that Scott Parker certainly drummed into us. And you've got to give the guy a real, real bit of, you know, big slice of credit, because he's worked with a team which is need building up after, you know, the heroics of last season, a very, very short turnaround, and you've got to get him ready for a real battle in the Premier League. And I think that the foundations are starting to form, and we're going to reap the benefits from it too.
I think for me, it's kind of from the offset with the success, it's kind of that starts with the team selections now, and there's this element of kind of ruthlessness from Scott Parker now, and as fans, we're kind of having to feel a bit uncomfortable. As Fulham fans, we're kind of having to sort of embrace what is uncomfortable and kind of a bit foreign to us, you know, not having our captain in the team, not having Mitrovic even making the squad. And as fans, we're kind of on this journey of learning what's kind of happening under Scott Parker and with players, I guess, and with the players. And there's kind of no room for this kind of sentimentality in the Premier League, I guess, that we're having to learn and the players are having to learn. And to succeed in the Premier League, you've got to be ruthless. And I guess we saw that with the team today against Liverpool, you know, new faces and kind of stalwarts that have been in our team on the bench, like Kearney. But it's paying off, and we're just kind of bearing the fruits of Scott Parker's experience that people seem to think he doesn't have.
Okay, well, we're going to take a quick break, and then afterwards we've got a load of great questions to get through.
This is an advertisement for BetterHelp, a portal for finding online therapy. How's your social battery right now? If you feel a bit drained or lacking enthusiasm to meet all the social commitments in your life, then that can be a totally normal thing, especially with things picking up as we head out of winter. I know that pretty frequently a weekend just doing a few chores and watching the football was about the limit of my energy resources. But therapy can be a place to help you gain the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your batteries. Contrary to popular belief, therapy isn't just for those who have experienced major trauma. The overall goal is to empower you to be the best version of yourself. And if therapy is something you've considered, then why not give BetterHelp a try? BetterHelp is entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. They'll match you with a UK mental health professional with a wide variety of expertise. There's no referral needed, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge, giving you complete control over the whole experience. Fulhamish listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/fulhamish. That's betterhelp.com/fulhamish.
Welcome back to the Fulhamish podcast. Sammy James here with Drew Heatley.
Hello.
Cam Ramsey.
Happy Sunday.
And Izzy Barker.
Hello.
By the way, it was a lovely tribute today for Papa Booba Diop before the game. It's exactly to the day when he scored in 2004 against Man United at the Cottage. So a really fitting tribute, the performance today. And just, you know, that minute's applause before the match as well was absolutely beautiful. And I noticed he was on the cover of the programme as well, which was a lovely touch by the club and a fine tribute to a fine player for Fulham. Drew, I'm going to fire you up here because you probably haven't seen this, but here's Jurgen Klopp's quote that he gave to Five Live after the match just now. Fulham didn't play the way they usually play. It was just long balls. What do you say to that, Drew?
Right, so this really does wind me up because Jurgen Klopp has made his career in two ways, one on the pitch and one off the pitch, by being this media savvy, affable, fake teethed, tosser. And, By saying things like that, he just makes himself look clueless. He makes himself look like he doesn't know what he's talking about, and he makes himself look like an ungracious, I was going to say loser, but an ungracious drawer in this occasion, because he didn't get what he wanted. He's wrong. You know, it wasn't a smash and grab today. It was a really accomplished performance on the champions from a side that wasn't expected to get anything. You know, we've shown this season that we have many strings to our bow, and at the end of the day, one or two long balls for a start, you know, absolutely fine. If you can change your style from one game to the next and get a result like we did today, then that's fine. And if they weren't prepared enough to be ready for whatever Fulham side that they had, then, you know, that's their lookout. But, you know, I saw a lot more than just long balls today, let me tell you that. And I was on a shitty stream. So, you know, there we go.
So not annoyed at all, Andrew.
No, really calm about the situation. Right, let's come on to some questions. I just saw that on Twitter. I was like, I will give that one straight to Drew. Right, I'm going to go to you on this one, Cam, because you are a man for the superlative and an adjective. This one from Matt Roberts. Is Anguissa the best centre midfielder outside the top eight? And question two, by how much?
Anguissa is a baller beyond compare, and I'd say if you were to stack at least 100 Patrick Vieiras on top of one another, they would not surpass his greatness. Honestly, he's a general. The guy is a leader, a baller. He's just incisive. He's deceptive. He's everything you expect from a modern day Premier League midfielder. And for me, He's the embodiment of Moussa Dembele, the great man Papa Bouba Diop, and he's all of them rolled into one. And I can't speak highly enough of the guy. So yes, for me, he's the best midfielder outside the top six or eight. But then again, he can also weave his magic in the best teams, or so-called best teams in this division, without a doubt, effortlessly. He's my guy. He's my guy, honestly.
He is a true hero. A lot of the questions today are people looking for praise about a particular player. I think we're going to get round pretty much the whole team by the time I've done the questions. So, Izzy, I'll go to you on this one. This one's from Liam White. He says, didn't stand out as much as Lamina, Decadova, Reed or Adebayo today, but I loved Aina's quick crossfield balls and thought he was very positionally sound. Does he keep his place once Tete's fit, particularly if we are less reliant on aerial service into Mitro when we go forward? Aina was very much seen as this stopgap when Tete got injured. Tete played in the week for the under-23, so clearly his comeback is imminent into the first team. But I was thinking this during the game, Aina hasn't done a lot wrong to lose his place. But then again, if Scott's shown one thing this year, is he doesn't have massive sentimentality.
Yeah, exactly. But no, I thought he actually had a brilliant defensive game. I picked up on that, and I thought he was doing a really good job of kind of snaffling up Mane, and they barely, if you think about it, they barely really had a sniff. And it just kind of all came to him looking, you know, look really calm. And I don't know if you kind of noticed that from the offset. I feel like when he was, when they were doing the tribute at the start and when he walked out, and it's all kind of new for him, the Fulham kind of fan culture and everything. And he looked like he was really thriving off that. I don't know if that made him seem a bit more confident, but yeah, I think that definitely reflected. But I feel like everyone at the back looked so much more comfortable. And I think maybe that's to do with Anderson probably injecting a bit of organisation and calmness into them all. But yeah, I was really pleased with Aina today, and I would keep him in.
I mean, Jacob Wong asked the question, Drew, on a similar line. He said, where does Tete fit into this new back four and a half? Which I like, actually. Back four and a half is a great expression, Jacob. But it's, you know, does Tete get his place back if, let's say, he's fit for the Brighton game?
There's a lot of layers, isn't there, to it. There's the undoubted quality of Tete, and the fact that he's been brought in on the permanent. He is our player, and Aina's obviously not. But I think if there's one thing you don't do, it's the old adage, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. I think it's not going to do Tete any harm whatsoever to get fully fit and wait for Aina to slip up or have a dip in form or whatever it is before he comes in. There's no rush, is there, at the moment. It's working well. We know that Aina can also swaz one in every so often. So he's definitely got one or two items in his locker that we can tap into. So ultimately, Tete, you know, is going to be our fullback going forward. and in the future. So there's no rush for me. He'll come in eventually, but I don't think we need to do it yet.
Speaking of swazzing them in, I thought Aina was very unlucky not to win Match of the Day Goal of the Month for that one against West Brom. It went to Danny Ings, and I think Aina's was a better strike, but clearly I'm biased. Drew, I'll stick with you on this one. Vincent Leander says, can someone actually explain to me how he signed Tosin Adebayo for such a small fee and how long before Real Madrid come calling? I love after a result like this when all the superlatives come out. But it was another top performance from Adebayo. Actually missed quite a good chance from a header in the second half from a corner. I thought he had a free header, basically. I thought he could have done a lot better with it. But anyway, defensively, sound once again. He was good against City as well, wasn't he? Seems to be the kind of player that's often in the right place at the right time and makes it look effortless.
He is, and he's sort of, he's growing as every game goes on. At the beginning, you could see he was so competent and was a great addition when we sort of brought him in initially, but there was one or two sort of moments of naivety, I guess. There was that cross box ball at the beginning of the Everton game where you just think, you know, you've got a couple more years experience in you, you're not going to do that. But it's going to be one of those big mysteries as to how we get a young centre back for that money from one of the top six, especially when, if you think back, you know, we were struggling with our centre back recruitment. If you believe Tony Khan, how you know, people are getting COVID and all these different things, and we're looking at fifth, sixth, seventh choice recruits. You'd think that Man City would sort of read the tweets and think, well, we got them over a barrel here. Let's whack on another couple of million, but they didn't. Why? Well, we don't know. But obviously, we said at the time, you only have to look at the reaction of the club, the selling club's fans, that to know that you've got a bargain on your hands. Will he be with us for the long term? Well, it really depends on how he does going forward. But at the moment, you know, so far so good. And if he does go, then we'll hopefully get a damn sight more than the 1.9 mil we got him for.
Apparently, there's a bit of a connection with Tosin and Scott. I think they've known each other for a while or something. And last year at Blackburn, apparently Scott was keeping like a big eye on him. And so maybe that's why, I don't know, maybe he pulled the strings and that's why we got him for so cheap. But yeah, he's going to add a lot of value to himself as well. So that's really good for us if we do let him go.
Well, I guess that's the value, isn't it, of having a player like Scott Parker, who is well connected. And, you know, there's a big debate in football as to whether these appointments of the likes of Lampard, Gerrard, Parker, Arteta, who, you know, straight out of the game really work. But having those connections like Parker does, you know, clearly, you know, breeds dividends sometimes. It did with Onuma and as you say, may have done with Adebayo. Izzy, Josh Whitcomb asks, a question for the pod. Wasn't it nice to have fans back at the Cottage for the Liverpool match so they could bear witness to one of the world's best right backs, Bobby Decker Dover Reed? We've kind of analysed Decker Dover Reed, so I won't ask you too much more on his performance, but how great was it to have the fans back at the Cottage today? Obviously, none of us actually got a ticket for the game, and actually, only Jack Kelly from the entire podcast actually managed to get a ticket for the Liverpool game. We were very unlucky in the ballot, I must say, for today. But just even watching on the telly, it was magnificent to have 2,000 fans there, and the noise they made was really impressive, considering, you know, it's what, a tenth of the ground at full capacity?
Yeah, it was so nice. It honestly did make me a little bit emotional, and my dad was lucky to get one of the tickets, and like, he was getting a bit emotional about it. It's sad, but I don't know, I feel like just kind of seeing everyone together and what everyone's kind of been through, and seeing a lot of the players that haven't been there when the fans have been there, like, was quite emotional as well. And and yeah, it felt like so many more fans were, it felt like so many more of them were there, and they were really thriving off that. And apparently that was something that Scott touched on, that it just changed the kind of energy and the dynamic. And maybe when we were going forward, we just kind of looked like a whole new animal, because we had this kind of, it's so cliche harping back to fans, but had them there kind of like cheering them on. And yeah, then Bobby Reed just looked, was being asked a lot of on that right-hand side. He's kind of wing back, right winger, and at times somewhere in between. And he was obviously thriving with the fans as well.
It really, really was great. And I love the fact that we've managed to get them at both ends as well. So you've kind of, whatever end Fulham are attacking, there is a fan presence behind those goals. I mean, I generally think that when the Cottage and some of our greatest nights were when the Hammersmith and Putney ends were filled with Fulham fans. And this is only adding to my argument that potentially the Putney end is not the best place for away fans. But that's a debate for another time. Drew, it really just makes such a difference. It's over 9 months since we saw Fulham last play at Craven Cottage, that 2-0 win over Preston North End. And little did we know that day that it would be such a long time before we went back to Craven Cottage. And, you know, a really great opportunity for those 2,000 fans that got to go. And I guess it'll be another big occasion on Wednesday, assuming it all goes ahead with fans.
Yeah, we all know the cliches of the 12th man, but it's almost like a fascinating experiment to show the impact that a crowd has on a team, because we came out the traps so fast today and it really set the tempo for that first half where we really didn't give Liverpool a sniff and we were all over them and we weren't giving them any time at all. And that, I honestly think that's down to the fans. I think that it really gave everybody such a boost. And, you know, bearing in mind as well, you're not getting any away fans in there. So it's all Fulham all of the time. And I just think, you know, you're not going to get that all the time. So I think we need to make the most of this half in, half out scenario where as long as we're in tier two, we're just getting all of the fans in. There was one of the games just after lockdown ended. I think it might have even been Brentford, actually, the first game back with no fans. And we lost 2-0 and you could just, all you could hear at the full-time whistle were the Brentford fat cat directors and the coaches and stuff all guffawing and patting each other on the back so hard that I'm surprised they weren't paralysed. It was horrible. So it's lovely to get, you know, all of us in there and just, you know, smother them. And I think that's going to be crucial on Wednesday against Brighton.
It really is. And speaking of Brighton, we're going to take a quick break and we're going to look ahead to Wednesday's game. Welcome back to the Fulhamish podcast. Sammy James here with Drew Heatley, Izzy Barker and Cam Ramsey. So just before we end the podcast today, a quick look ahead to Brighton on Wednesday. Feels like first time in forever that Fulham have had a midweek match. I guess we had those ones in the cup earlier in the season, but an important midweek match. It feels very much like being back in the Championship and a massive game, Cam. Brighton, as we speak, are 2 points ahead of Fulham. Obviously, we don't know what their result is against Leicester at the time of recording, but there is a chance, if things went our way, that we could overtake Brighton into 16th. And, you know, it's a huge match. We've come through these four games that very much not winnable ones, and suddenly we're presented with an opportunity actually where we probably are expecting Fulham to get 3 points. It's a slightly different dynamic in that sense where there's going to be a bit more pressure on the team.
No, completely right. You want to approach each game with the same attitude and treat it as a cup final as such. I mean, Brighton, they're a team obviously that they're going to be in and around the positions that we are, and they're struggling to find a little bit of form themselves coming through the games that we've had recently. Of course, none of us were expecting to pick up a single point against Leicester, Man City and Liverpool, but we've managed to scramble away with four, and that must play on Brighton psychologically, knowing that we're obviously finding our feet in the Premier League, and with the talent we have, you know, at our disposal and the personnel that we have, they're going to be expecting a very, very difficult encounter at Craven Cottage come Wednesday. And I'm just looking at them now. I mean, as we speak, as the pod's recording, they're actually 2-0 down against Leicester. So
they're actually 3-0 down.
They're 3-0 down, beg your pardon. Well, yeah. That just throws everything out the window. But they're going to have a point to prove against us. You know, we're fellow basement boys in some respects. So they're going to want to stamp a little bit of supremacy upon us. They're only a couple of points ahead, of course. But I fancy our chances, especially after the way we played in the last three games. And even before that, we've really shown some resolve and resilience. And I honestly don't know where Brighton are going to find any kind of upward inflection heading into Wednesday night. So we'll just see how it goes. But yeah, I'm very, very confident with the way that we're playing at the moment. We'll give them a very, very good game.
Izzy, how would you approach this tactically if you're Parker? We found this system that is, you know, playing this kind of four and a half at the back as Jacob Wong on the questions coined. And I really like it. But Jack talked about it in Thursday's pod about how the pressure is going to be on us to keep the ball and display our dominance on Brighton. So could we see a few changes for this match and maybe a slight tweak tactically from Parker?
Yeah, of course, definitely going into it. I think Brighton have been actually really unlucky. I think this is going to be the game that tactically we've got to show, okay, yeah, we can back it up. You know, we've taken it to big six sides, but yeah, we've got to back it up against the likes of Brighton if we're going to stay in this league. So yeah, we may see a few tweaks, but I think it's going to come down to coming down to really kind of gritting our teeth with this game, because with Brighton, what they do is they just ride it out right until the end. They get those late penalties, those late goals. So it's going to be interesting to see. Maybe I would personally start Harrison Reed over Lamina. I think that would suit Brighton's style a bit better. But yeah, it's going to be about weathering the storm with Brighton for sure, because they've been really unlucky with games like Chelsea and things like that. They probably should have a few more points than they do. But they don't have that real kind of star man. They don't have that real talisman striker. So yeah, fairly the same. But I'd maybe just start Harrison Reed over Lamina personally.
Well, that was Ryan Burns' question answered. So thank you very much, Izzy. And Drew, are you confident of a win on Wednesday? Is there a danger of overconfidence going into this one?
Massively. It's probably one of the biggest obstacles that we've got. I think, as we were saying earlier, you know, we had all of these games where nobody expected us to get anything from, and the pressure was off, at least from the outside. And playing a team in and around you where you've got a real chance, as it stands, to overtake them with a win, it brings its own set of challenges. And I think and overconfidence is certainly one of them. And it's like Izzy said, that, you know, Brighton play in a different way to some of the big teams, and we're going to be expected to have more of the ball. So will our four and a half at the back sort of counter-attacking, our new penchant for counter-attacking, is that going to be the best way to tackle Brighton? These are all things that Parker needs to think about. And obviously, if his answer is no, then you're going to see more changes. But it's very difficult to upset the apple cart when things are going well. So I think there's a real big two, three, four days, however long it is, coming up for Parker, and some big decisions for him to make. But at the moment, to be honest, you know, I trust him with my son, so he can do what he pleases. I'm confident in his ability to figure it out ahead of Wednesday.
Oh, brilliant. Okay, well, that's all for the podcast today. Always a weird one when we have to record straight after the games. It feels like you don't have a lot of time to let things really, really soak in. But we will be doing a podcast on Thursday. Myself, Jack and Peter Rutzler will be looking back at that Brighton game, and then looking ahead to the Newcastle game. The game's coming thick and fast as Christmas approaches. The podcast name for today, I haven't had, as I said, loads of time to look through all the best ones, but I did like, and I know you guys enjoyed it as well, Ishan MS's one on Instagram, which was Lads Showed Carragher, which is that kind of like double play on the three-word review. So well done, Ishan. Great pod name today. To Drew Heatley, thank you very much.
Thank you. And sorry, Liverpool. Viva Roy Hodgson. See you later.
You said during one of the breaks that you're worried that someone could remix some of your rants into Park Life today, and I'm very much hoping that someone with some audio chops and a bit of time on their hands over the next couple of days can muster that up. To Cam Ramsey, thank you very much.
No problem, mate. Always preferred Everton anyway.
And Izzy Barker, thank you very much.
Oh, that was so sweet. Thank you very much.
A very enjoyable podcast. I'll finish you with a tweet that just came in a few moments ago, which was Max Bryson, who said, "The upcoming episode of the At Fulhamish pod is going to be flames emoji." Max, all I can say is I hope it's lived up to expectations. Have a good start of your week. If you have a ticket for Wednesday, really hope you enjoy it. Come on, you Whites.